a wonderful husband and wife that have come up here to share their experience, faith, and hope. And they've elected to let Kelsey go first. So, Kelsey, you're up first.
Right on.
All right.
Thank you, Victor. Whew. Kelsey Alcoholic. Thank you, Victor, for asking us to speak. Thank you, everyone, for showing up. I haven't been nervous at all, but I'm already feeling emotional, so here we go. A wise woman told me it's my story, so I can't mess it up. So, how did I come to these rooms? A little bit of just background. I like to say not so that I, so that anybody who hears this message and needs to relate maybe can relate to part of my story. My mother and father married very young. When they did marry, they were in their active addiction, alcoholism. It was a very chaotic relationship, a lot of abuse, and that was my early years. They split when I was 5, and both had new partners within a year, and that was a lot for me to try and understand and handle as a young child. I am very grateful for my father, who, when I was about 5 years old, decided to come to these rooms, and he has many years of sobriety and clean time. Because of him, I was first exposed to the program. I went to a lot of meetings and as a child and heard all the stories. When my mother remarried, she married another alcoholic. And so I lived in like both worlds growing up. They had 50-50 custody, and I'd go to one house and they were working a program, and they were clean and sober, and there was a sense of stability and where I could be a child. And at the other home, it was still chaos a lot of the time. And then there was a lot of, and because of that chaos, because my stepdad, who I loved dearly, even though I tried to hate him at first. There was a lot of pain there. And so, like around 10 or so, two core events happened. I was done at that point. I was done with these adults in my life that that caused a lot of pain. And I grew up in a, both houses where I was raised Christian. Nothing extremely like strict from the religion. It really was a lot of proclamation of like God is love. But by the age of around 10, I was really tired of this God who obviously couldn't figure out my parents and couldn't make my life any better. And I vividly remember being on my knees in my room, and I just told God, you know what, like, I'm tired of you, I'm tired of this, like, don't worry about it anymore, like, I'll take it from here. And so at that point, a dear friend in this room, I've heard him speak a lot and share that that's like the main big R, resentment. And that's when I got my first resentment. And then shortly after that, we went camping a lot as a family and with my dad and his wife. And so they were sober, but the family still drank. And so we were at one of these campouts, and they let us sleep in the bar. And because it was like on family's land, and they had a bar. And I remember I was like with me and my cousins, and I opened this like little mini fridge, and there was a this bottle of beautiful red liquid, and it was Fireball, and I was like, oh, that looks tasty, and I was like, well, you know what, like, I don't want to be like all these people that I hate so much and that have like caused me so much pain, so I don't want to be that, but like all these other people drink and seem to have fun, and so I'll just be like them. And so I justified it. That was like my first justification of why I could take this first drink. And I took that first drink, and I drank a good portion of that bottle. And I, for the first time, I felt like peace and joy and like freedom. And that everything was okay. Like everything inside me was finally okay. And I think a part of me knew, like, oh man, this is, like, I'm probably going to be, like, them then, because this is, like, making me feel okay. So it was, like, everything I wanted, and also it terrified me. And so that was, like, around 10, and I tried to, like, stay clear of it for, like, the next couple of years, because it, like, did terrify me so much. I guess that at that point, is when I first started to white knuckle it, at that like young age, because I knew that it like gave me everything that I wanted, and that terrified me, and I didn't want to be like those people, and so I just wanted to be good. I also really like that was like a big thing growing up, to keep a lot of the peace in a lot of different ways. Like, I just wanted to be good so that I could help, like, control everybody's emotions. And so I was. I did really good in school. I stayed out of trouble. And then when I was 12, the home that was, like, my safe place, my stepmom decided to leave. And it was pure chaos. So... Now I had two homes that were chaos, and I had, like, and I say that, and then I feel like I need to also say that I also, like, had, like, a lot of good times, and, like, a lot of good memories also, and I think that's why it made it so confusing to look back and see, like, where all of it started, So then I turned 14 and entered high school, and I thought, well, I really wanted to numb the pain at that point, because between 10 and 14, the way that, since I wasn't drinking, the way that I tried to mitigate my emotions and everything internally was through self-harming, and I didn't want to die, I just wanted the pain to stop, but then people started noticing. And they started freaking out, thinking that I wanted to die. So then I hid it in places that people couldn't see. And then I turned 14 and went into high school. And then it was like more accessible at that point. And so then it became like in my awareness again of like, oh yeah, I remember this. And so I tried, like, the control drinking. You know, I was, like, still a good student and, like, didn't hang out with, like, the bad kids, whatever that meant, because any chance I got, I was going to the friends' houses where they were allowed to drink and there was alcohol, and I would drink to the point where I, like, blackout drink. I would drink to the point where I'd wake up the next morning and not know... with whom or what happened, and that happened a lot. So essentially it was high school, and then when I moved out, I, you know, still thought I was, like, in control of it, still, like, you know, able to have a full-time job and take college courses and get good grades, all the while, like, on the weekends, I'm blackout drinking, and then I found weed, which I had tried in high school, but apparently I didn't do it right. It was like out of an apple, and it's probably a good thing I didn't do it right, because then when I did do it right, I was like, oh, so. So then it was that. And that was like, I liked that because that was easier to do while still going to work and still going to school. And that was like my early 20s, essentially, thinking that I was maintaining or managing my life, when really it was just a lot of like blackout drinking and going to bars and not knowing how I was getting home and waking up and not knowing who was in my house. And then my mother passed away when I was 24, after 10 years of battling cancer. And she had two young children at the time. They were 10 and 12, and it had been established years prior that I would take care of them whenever she were to pass away. And so that's what I did. And I quit my job at the time and went back to school online through universities. I would do that when they were at school and then take care of them when they'd come home from school. And I would do that Monday through Friday. And then I would send them to my grandma's on the weekends and drink. The same routine, the blackout drinking. And the insanity of my thinking, so I've been married once before, and when my mom passed away, I was married, we had just got married, and a couple months later my mom passed away, and then there was now two children, and of course I'm not going to raise them as I had been raised, and so the obvious thing is there'd be no alcohol or weed in the house, because I made my mother a promise, and my partner at the time work knock shift, and so wanted to drink a beer when they came home so that they could go to sleep. And I was just like, if we keep beer in the fridge all week long, that would make us an alcoholic, so we can't do that, so you have to go. And I got a divorce because of that literal reason, and then would send them to my grandma so I could blackout drink on the weekends, because, you know, that's just like partying and like having fun and like being young. And that was it was a year of that. So that was kind of like my rock bottom, the year after my mom passed, and me waking up and after having gone to the billiards, because, you know, that's a fancy place, and waking up and not knowing who was in my home, not knowing how I got home, and like literally half dressed, like tiptoeing through my house to see if anybody was still there. And I called my friend and I was like, hey girl, so what happened last night? And thankfully she was less drunk than me and like kicked everybody out and locked up the house. By God's grace, I had a lot of good friends like that saved me a lot of times. And that was the moment that I kind of like had a moment of clarity of like, oh my gosh, I think I might have a problem. And I called my sister-in-law at the time, my brother's wife, because they were also in the rooms. And I said, hey, sister, I think I have a problem. And I started going to meetings for a year. I did the other program at that time. And because that's what I was familiar with, I think, and that's like who I, you know, I had family there, so it felt a little bit more comfortable to start going there. And I mainly did the women's meetings on Sundays, and I even had a commitment part of the time. And you know, I thought I was ready, but then I started finding the differences. I wasn't actually ready to really look at my entire self and admit that I had become everything that I despised so much and that had caused me so much pain. And I couldn't really fathom the fact that I had not only become that, but I had become that while having custody of my brother and sister. Like, and so after a year, I told myself, well, actually, I just didn't drink for an entire year. So obviously I don't have a problem because, you know, I have a year. So actually, never mind. And I don't need this program. And I'm trying to think, but I must have met you before I made that decision. which is, yeah, okay. So, in the program, I did meet the love of my life. I fell in love with his voice before I even saw his face, actually, because he was sharing in a meeting, and I said, and so we actually met in recovery, and we met at the end of 2016. He's better with the dates. At the end of 2016, and he proposed 5 months later, and we were married by the end of the next year, and pregnant a few months after that. And for a little bit of context, I also was finishing my degree at this time. I was going to online through a Christian university. And so I finished my degree, we got married, we got quickly pregnant, I got quickly pregnant, and I don't even, it wasn't even like a real conversation that we had. I don't even think I really said it out loud to anybody. I think it was just kind of something that I decided internally. And so then he's like trying to continue his recovery, and we have a baby now, and I find myself starting to resent the program. Because it's taking him away, because he wants to go to meetings, and I just wanted him to not need it, because, like, I had told myself I didn't need it, like, you know, we just, you know, follow the rules of religion and do the right thing, and you just don't drink, you just make the choice to not drink, it's just that simple, you just don't drink, and so even though we had met in recovery, and we had that understanding of each other, like, I made this decision about myself because I wasn't really ready to look at me, and quickly caught resentment, which did ultimately affect, I think, in part, his recovery journey, which I'll let him share. But I wasn't drinking, but I was definitely not recovered, right? Like, I was still completely miserable. I was still completely acting on all my character defects. I was still thinking with an alcoholic mind. I was still operating from that place. And I was pissed off, really, because I was white knuckling it, and I couldn't drink. And I was pissed off because I couldn't drink, right? Because I wanted to, but I had made the decision not to. And I was pregnant, and then I was breastfeeding, so, you know, there was, like, this, like, barrier, which I also think is immensely God's grace, because I've been pregnant and or breastfeeding for the past nearly 8 years, and I truly, truly believe that that had a huge part in it, because it, like, I really, it was in my mind, like, because I know a lot of women would be like, and women told me, like, throughout the journey, they'd be like, oh, you can have a glass of wine and wait 2 hours, and in my mind, like, if I have a glass of wine, I'm drinking the whole bottle of wine, and then my baby's not gonna eat all night, so I have to wait till it gets out of my system, so, like, this isn't really an option for me, and so that gave me, like, a physical barrier between this, like, white-knuckling and this desire that I had for the drink, our marriage falls apart, and I'm still, you know, trying to, trying not to need this program, still white-knuckling it, still thinking that I could just, you know, manage life on my own ability, I guess I'll do a little fast-forwarding. We end up trying to one more time, and at that point, when we had made a decision to try to get back together again. We were kind of messed up from, we were kind of, I don't want to cuss, we were kind of screwed from the beginning. I think at least for my end, I was we weren't going into it from any kind of healthy position, any kind of healed point, any kind of that. It was, I had always hoped that eventually we would mend things and make our way back together. But the moment that we decided to do so was, for me on my end, I had caught a lot of resentments from my family. And like, I wanted to do it the quote unquote right way. I wanted, you know, whatever that would look like. I don't know, but, I had asked a family member if me and the kids, the two girls at the time, could live with her, and I was told no. And it, one, it broke my heart, and I didn't understand it, and I essentially said, well, okay, then, okay, like, I'll just do this thing. Like, we're just going to do this thing. And I convinced myself at that point, because I still couldn't drink because I was breastfeeding, but, you know, because weed is medical now, I could smoke weed. And so we did that. And then I was pregnant again shortly after that. And looking back, I was very, very ill during that pregnancy. And I did become the alcoholic addict who uses while they're pregnant, even though I swore I would never be one of those, because I justified using the weed all throughout my pregnancy. I was immensely sick for the entire 36 weeks, and it was very hard to eat. However, there are probably plenty of other options for nausea than weed that I could have possibly at least tried. But looking back, I think it's because I was so spiritually sick that I was falling apart in every other way. And ended up relocating to Florida, had our third child, our first boy, and I was still smoking a lot of weed, like a lot of weed. Like, I could smoke a lot of weed, like probably that most people, like, I was always confused by people who would just like take like I used to smoke out like this homemade bong, and they just like do like two bowls, and I'm like, can we not smoke the whole pile? Like, what do you mean you're gonna go take a nap? Like, what? So smoking a lot of weed, but of course it was medical because it was like in this pen. And, you know, they're, like, fancy now. And I'm sure in some ways it does, from a non-alcoholic addict perspective, there are probably medicinal, not probably, there are medicinal factors. But if you're, I have learned for myself as an alcoholic and addict, if I were to ever use that for a medical reason, it has to be with a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely not under the care of a medical doctor. I was self-medicating, and just very, very spiritually sick. No spiritual connection. My health continued to go downhill. And I'll fast forward a little bit.
It takes 5 more minutes. To
five more
recovery.
Minutes.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
And so this was like my rock bottom right here. I had gotten injured and had to relocate back to Florida or to California, and the injury that I had wasn't healing, and I was in immense pain for months, and it got to a point where even this, you know, medical substance wasn't taking away my pain, and I was at a point to where I realized, like, I had been using this substance to mitigate my pain, and now I was in real physical pain, and I didn't want to have it anymore. Like, I finally didn't want to have it, and I wanted God more. I wanted a connection with Him more. I wanted whatever His will for my life was more than my desire for the drug or the drink. And I started to get the medical help that I needed, and so physically started to recover, and was able to make it back to these rooms because of my lovely partner, who continued to work a program and was going to meetings. And one day I was like, well, I think I want to go with you. Like, I'd like to go to a meeting. And I started going to meetings, and I allowed myself to be a part of. I finally stopped finding the differences and focused on the similarities, and clung to the, I don't know where it's at in the book, but clung to where it says that if we straighten out spiritually, we'll straighten out mentally and physically. And I had no hope left in this program. Knowing that God moves in this program was my only hope. And I wanted it desperately. I wanted it bad enough that I was willing to look at myself entirely and in whichever way I needed to. Was going to meetings consistently and started to pray for a sponsor, telling God that I was ready for a sponsor and to allow me to find one. And then I heard a beautiful woman speak one night in Lompoc and completely resonated with her story and asked her to be my sponsor, or my trusted friend, I should say. And we've been working the steps together. And I had admitted that I was powerless and my life had become unmanageable. That's how I made it back to the rooms. And I knew that there's, I always known that there's power greater than me. Even though I didn't know what to call it and I had issues with the word God, I knew that it was alive and well. And I made a decision to turn my will and my life over. And I think I did a pretty good job on step four. I took like quite a while where Kim was like, okay, are we gonna wrap this up? And so I think it was pretty thorough. And we went over it, step five, and step six and seven was a cool experience. I'll share that, which shows the spirituality of this program, is that we had finished step five, and in my brain, I don't know the steps really by heart. So my brain, I'm like, okay, next week, you know, Kim and I will go over step six. And didn't really know what step six was because I don't have it memorized. And some things were coming up, some character defects. And I just got to a point where I was like, realizing like, I don't want to be like this anymore. Like I, no matter how hard I try, I can't not be like this, no matter how much effort, how much da-da-da. And so I went and I laid down and I just prayed this simple prayer, like, God, I'm tired of being like this. Please take this from me and show me how to be different. Please help me to be different. And I said that, threw the prayer up. Took a minute to like regulate myself, got up and went on with my day, went to bed that night and put on Joe and Charlie. Yeah. And because we were going to be doing six and seven, I listened to it, six, seven, and eight, I think it was maybe, or five, six, and seven. And they were talking and they explained it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I did step six earlier today and I didn't even realize it. Like, what? And I like got out of bed and ran to him and I told him, and he was like, yeah, it's a spiritual program. I'm like, oh. And so it shows me that the program works sometimes even when you don't realize it a lot of the times. We've done eight and nine, and Kim has done a really awesome job at helping me understand where I actually need to make amends and where I don't, which ones are would cause more harm, and which ones should be living amends. And then we will do 10 and 11, 12 very soon. And then the last thing I'll say is that if you struggle with a higher power, or the word God, or understanding what or who God is, a very cool way that we know that God is not, that we are in God's will and doing the next right indicated thing, is that we will be out and about doing whatever we're supposed to be doing, and we'll cross paths from somebody from the rooms. And it happens frequently, at least a few times a week, and more specifically if we're unsure, if we're trying to make a decision or whatnot and we're not sure, is this God's will, is this my will, and we're just not sure if we're on the right path or doing the right thing. Like, we just keep doing the next right thing and we'll cross paths with somebody from the room. So I think having God do that in our lives has shown me what people mean by, if you don't know how to connect with a God or a higher power, that like the rooms can be your higher power. And I think that that's a really good example of that. And so, and I'm much less spiritually sick than I was a year and a half ago or so. Mm-hmm. And this program works, and I don't feel like I'm losing my mind anymore. And I have peace even when life is not perfect and trials and things come up and you have to deal with things in life. There's still peace and a knowing that it'll be all taken care of and worked out how it's supposed to be. Thank you for letting me share.
That was a wonderful, wonderful talk.